Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Manil Suri, who reads from and discusses his new book, The Age of Shiva, published by W.W. Norton. In the weeks to come, we have Benjamin Black and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a moment, it's time to begin.
Each morning after her bath, I would see Sandhya in the courtyard performing her puja of Arya. She would swirl an earthenware lamp resting on a round metal thali in a circle before Arya's face, as one might in front of a picture at a shrine. She would mark his forehead with ash from the platter and sometimes dab on some vermilion and a moistened grain of rice. She would bend her head and wait for him to color the parting in her hair with a line of the vermilion. Then she would bend even lower to touch his feet, first the right, then the left. She would run the same hand over her head to bless herself as she began to rise. The first time I saw this puja, I stood in the kitchen transfixed. The touching of feet was a ritual strictly forbidden by Paji in our house. All this scraping, all this servility, hasn't anyone in this country heard of human dignity? Aren't there enough gods in the temples already to satisfy this national hunger for groveling? We spent two centuries licking the boots of the British. Did you ever see them go around prostrating themselves at anyone's feet? Our cousins, of course, had all been taught to perform this ritual at the beginning and end of every visit to show respect to their elders. Paji would yank their heads back up the instant they started to bend. "Did you drop something?" he would demand. "Are you preparing to do push-ups? You can look around on the floor all you want, but I'll slap you if you touch my feet." For a while when we were young, Biji tried to force us to go through this ritual when Paji was not around. "You insolent daughter of an owl, I don't care what your father says. I'll break every bone in your body if you don't touch your grandmother's feet." At other times, she would try to cajole us. "It's a mark of respect, nothing else. What's the harm in bowing before wisdom, before age?" She would tell us stories from the Mahabharata and the Ramayana to further her argument, such as the one where Bharat kept his brother's sandals on the throne when Ram was exiled into the forest. "It's part of our culture, something that's come down to us from the ages," she would say. "It's a dignified custom. You should perform it proudly, not be ashamed." Once Paji found out, he quickly put an end to BG's efforts. What can one expect? The children in our village had to wash their parents' feet and drink the water afterwards in respect. Is that what she's going to teach you to do next? During the first years, Paji told us, there was a time when BG wouldn't eat anything in the morning until she had touched his feet. He would tell me I was her lord, her protector, her provider, that she couldn't start the day without my blessing. When I stopped her, she would pull my shoes out from under the bed and perform her ceremony over them. When I hid those, she started waiting until I was in the bath to touch my house slippers instead. It was years before I could break her of the habit, before I could keep any footwear lying around unlocked again. So that's Paji, and this ritual actually plays a role later on in the story. It propels things forward. So the last section that I'm going to read you is something that comes a couple of months after Meera has been in this household. She hasn't seen her parents for all this time, and there's this occasion that her parents are going to come and visit her for the first time. And this is the occasion of a fast that Hindu women in the north of India keep for their husbands. It's called Karva Choth. Karva is an earthenware pot, and Choth is the fourth day of the waning moon. And the idea is that the wife is not supposed to eat or drink anything from the time that the last star is visible at dawn all the way to the time that the moon rises at night. Now, it's Delhi, it's the north of India. It's very hot. It's usually in October. And, you know, that's the moon only rises at 8:45 at night. So it's a very arduous fast because you can't drink anything either. So what's been happening is that Paji, being very progressive and thinking that women and men are equal, has always forbidden his wife, Biji, from keeping this fast. So Meera doesn't know about it. But when she comes to the new household, everyone is keeping the fast. So she feels obliged to keep it with them. And so Paji is coming to this fast when the fast is being broken. What's been happening in the background is that Dev wants to go to Bombay. He wants to be a singer. So there in Delhi, he wants to go to Bombay. He needs a lot of money to be able to do that. And he's asked Meera to ask her father for the money. And her father has actually agreed. He says, you know, he wants to get his daughter out of this conservative household. He wants to send her to Bombay. He wants her to be educated. But he's told Dev that he'll give the money on one condition. And that is that at the end of this fast, he should not see his daughter touch her husband's feet. He tells him that if I see my daughter touch your feet, I'm going to walk out and you're not going to get any money and you'll never make it to Bombay. So this is what's going to happen at that last instant. I'm going to read you what happens when the fast is broken. By 8, the guests were all gathered in the courtyard. Mataji had invited her friends to share in the auspicious occasion of my first Karva Chauth. "There's Mrs. Sampat," Hema said, pointing at a woman sitting on the charpoy and kneading her chest. "She says she's going to get a heart attack since she can't take her blood pressure pills during the fast. Last year she fainted and the ambulance came and took her away. But people later said it was just to show off." "And that's Mrs. Gangwal. She still keeps the fast, even though her husband ran off with her niece 4 years ago. And next to her, Mrs. Pota, whose husband no one's ever seen, the rumor is he's dead." I was having difficulty breathing. My jewelry felt heavy and constraining, the wedding outfit from 2 months ago tight and suffocating around my chest. My scalp was on fire, as if I'd used chili powder, not vermilion, to decorate the parting in my hair. Even the bindi on my forehead itched so fiercely I felt like scratching it off. I sank down unsteadily on the special seat between Sandhya and Mataji, to which Hema accompanied me. Round us sat the other women, and beyond them the men stood about or watched from the charpoy. Thalis laden with offerings were circulated for everyone to admire, and my head swirled as I tried to follow the fruits and bangles and saris being passed from lap to lap. Mrs. Pota launched into a song about not sowing on Karva Chauth, and the women responded in a chorus about losing your husband if a stray needle were to prick him and drive him away. So I'm going to actually skip a few paragraphs, there's some ceremonies, and go to the point where the moon rises. "It's risen," Hema shouted, interrupting the ceremonies. "I can see it over there, next to that house." It was indeed the moon, its rounded edge already beginning to clear the treetops. We had been too absorbed in the rituals to notice its stealthy ascent. A hush fell over the congregation. Since I was the newest bride, it was my honor to be the first to break my fast. Sandhya helped me get up and bent down to arrange my foot on the center of the pestle. It felt cold and smooth against my arch, its convexity reassuring as I curled my toes around. Mataji handed me the sifter and I held it up against the knife. My vision swam as I did so. The moon looked a dirty white. I took the glass of milk from Sandhya and prepared to pour my offering to the moon. But I couldn't summon up the silent words that were to accompany this action. The women watched me and waited for their turns as I stood poised with the glass. Should I turn around to ask them what I should be praying for? Sandhya touched me at the shoulder and gently tilted my glass. I watched the thread of milk spill out and connect me to the earth. Dave loomed up in the sifter, his features curiously warped by the weave of the mesh. His nose seemed longer, his forehead too wide, the hollows under his eyes more pronounced. I looked at the blurred outline of his mouth and heard again the directions he had whispered. Don't worry about Paji. I'll catch you in my arms before you can bend too much. It'll look quite natural. Instead of touching my feet, we'll end it in a hug. Sunday, I exchanged the sifter and glass of milk in my hands for the fruit-laden thali I was to offer my mother-in-law. All that was required of me now was to follow Dave's instructions. He would catch me before I could complete my bow and feed me the first morsel to break my fast. Paji would nod approvingly from the charpoy upon seeing that Dave's feet remained untouched. Down at the station, the frontier mail would pull into the platform, ready to bear us away. Steam issuing out of its rearing engine, like from the nostrils of an impatient mare. I looked into Dave's eyes and saw he could picture the frontier mail as well. Was Bombay within reach now? Were his calculations proceeding as planned? Paji must surely have the same expression of self-satisfaction on his face. A daughter on her way to college, her life finally lived the way he wanted. Beside me stood Sandhya, her face shining with a serene beauty, like a moon bride descended to earth. I'm not sure what exactly triggered my divergence from the script. A clarity, calm, incisive, emerged from my hunger to reveal the action I had to take. I stared into Dave's eyes, and this time his sureness faltered, his satisfaction dimmed. Realization flooded in, and then alarm, as he followed the direction of my gaze. I bent down before I could be swayed by the pleading beginning to distort his face. Too late, he tried to grab me, but I dodged my shoulder out of the way. I descended so fast that an orange fell out of my thali and rolled into the crowd. Dave couldn't pull back his feet even if he wanted to. There were too many eyes focused on them. He stood rooted where he was, his face ashen, his toes as vulnerable and exposed as a statue's. I touched his right foot first, then his left, as Sandhya had instructed. The skin on his knuckles felt dry and surprisingly smooth. There was a quiver with each contact I made, as if my fingertips were delivering tiny electric shocks to him. I went through the motion of blessing myself by running my fingers through my hair. Then I rose, my head still bowed, ready to accept my father's rage, ready to accept the morsel that would release me from my fast for Dave. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Benjamin Black and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on March 4th, 2008.